Our world is more connected than ever before, but that has brought with it a seemingly endless variety of information and opinion sources. Instead of coming together, we are becoming more tribal. We are dividing ourselves into identity groups with opposing worldviews and even different facts. The result is unnecessary conflict and an inability to solve our shared problems. We are in a state of culture war. But we can move forward in peace and with a sense of fairness. We can make our lives fundamentally better. There are basic principles we've known since the Enlightenment that, when embraced and extended, will allow us to live together in community once again, to construct a shared understanding of reality, bridge our differences, and rebuild our institutions. But it requires a deeper commitment from all of us toward greater curiosity, empathy, and integrity. Welcome to Culture War Radio. Liberal values are worth fighting for.
Hello, my name is William. This is episode 65, recorded at 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. I'm getting some feedback. That's weird. Sorry. I wonder where that's coming from. And the date is July 12th, 2020. And the show is streamed every Sunday night from Downers Grove, Illinois, 20 miles west of downtown Chicago. Available live at live.culturewar.radio and later as a podcast at culturewar.radio. And the show is about talking politics and culture with guests, reviewing the week's news, and playing music. Last week had some technical issues. A little worried I'm having some technical issues right now. Don't know what the hell's going on. Alright, maybe if I bring down my volume a little bit, I'll be good. I'm not sure where to do it. Hope it's getting recorded, okay. Damn. Okay, so, wasn't sure I was going to do a show this week. I was supposed to be out of town, but that got canceled. I had technical issues last week, so I have, it's kind of good timing. I have 2 weeks of news I need to catch up on, play lots of music, and there was this big hubbub this week that hit. It's being called the Harper's Letter. It's a pushback against cancel culture, which is probably a decent term, but there's some questions about it. I think a lot of the pushback against the letter is kind of bullshit, but there's some good arguments. So I want to talk about all of that, and I was hoping to have some people contact in and talk about it, but not sure that's happening. So if you're out there, you're hearing this, I'd like to talk to you about it. I think it is an argument for liberal values. Maybe not as strong of an argument as they could have made, but it's something, and I'll get further into it. And there's plenty of other news and music to do tonight, so we'll get through it. And I was recommended this song to play, which I have not listened to. It's by an artist, Mac Miller. It's from his album, Swimming. The name of the song is actually 2009. So we'll play that, and then we'll be back. And I should have a guest to talk to. We'll see where we go with that. I'm not sure if I'll go straight to the guest. I think I want to read the letter first and get some other stuff. Anyway, back in a little over 5 minutes. So here we go.
Thank you. take breath, my bruno. Tell me better how angels supposed to fly. I ain't asking why no more. Oh no, I take it if it's mine. I don't stay inside the lines. It ain't 2009 no more. Yeah, I know what's behind that door. Yeah, okay, you gotta jump in to swim. Well, the light was dim and this life was sin. Now every day I wake up and breathe. I don't have it all, but that's alright with me. Take it nice and easy, took a flight to see me. Send you back home with a light that's beaming. The whole team about to figure it out. We ice cold, that's what winter about. And sometimes, sometimes, I wish I took a simpler route. Instead of having demons that's as big as my house. Have a ball with a dribble and bounce. Cause the party ain't over till they kicking me out. Yeah, isn't it funny? We can make a lot of money, buy a lot of things just to feel a lot of ugly. I was yay high and muddy, looking for what was looking for me. But I don't need to lie no more. Nowadays all I do is shine. Take a breath and ease my mind. She don't cry no more. Tell me that I get her high, cause an angel's supposed to fly. I ain't asking why no more. Oh no, I take it if it's mine. I don't stay inside the lines. It ain't 2009 no more. Yeah, I know what's behind that door. Yeah, they ask me what I'm smiling for. Well, because I've never been this high before. It's like I never felt alive before. I'd rather have me peace of mind than war. You see me and you, we ain't that different. I struck the fuck out and then I came back swinging. Take my time to finish, mind my business. A life ain't a life till you live it. I was digging me a hole, big enough to bury my soul. Weight of the world, I gotta carry my own. With these arms, I can carry you home. I'm right here when you scared and alone. And I ain't never in a hurry. You don't never gotta worry. Even when it's 7:30 and the time is running low. When your heart get cold, see what's behind all them unturned stones. And I'm a pro when it come to my job. But really I'm just trying to start believing in God. Now when it gets hard, I don't panic, I don't sound the alarm. Because I don't need to lie no more. Nowadays all I do is shine. Take a breath and ease my mind. She don't cry no more. She tell me that I get her high, cause an angel's supposed to fly. I ain't asking why no more. Oh no, I take it if it's mine. I don't stay inside the lines. It ain't 2009 no more. Yeah, I know what's behind that door. I don't need to lie no more. Nowadays all I do is shine. Take a breath and ease my mind. She don't cry no more. Tell me that I get her high, cause an angel's supposed to fly. I ain't asking why no more. Oh no, I take it if it's mine. I don't stay inside the lines. It ain't 2009 no more. Yeah, I know what's behind that door.
Sure, when we'll be setting up the guests, should be within an hour or so. I don't know, but what am I gonna do until then? Let's read the letter. That'll be a good way to start this thing. So, it's published by Harper's Magazine, and I've heard some complaints about who's behind Harper's Magazine. Anyway, Let's get to it. It was published, was it on Tuesday, July 7th, of course, this week, 2020. And it's called A Letter on Justice and Open Debate. Our cultural institutions are facing a moment of trial. Powerful protests for racial and social justice are leading to overdue demands for police reform, along with wider calls for greater equality and inclusion across our society, not least in higher education, journalism, philanthropy, and the arts. Sorry, audio issues here. Let's start that again. A Letter on Justice and Open Debate. Our cultural institutions are facing a moment of trial. Powerful protests for racial and social justice are leading to overdue demands for police reform, along with wider calls for greater equality and inclusion across our society, not least in higher education, journalism, philanthropy, and the arts. But this needed reckoning has also intensified a new set of moral attitudes and political commitments that tend to weaken our norms of open debate and toleration of differences in favor of ideological conformity. As we applaud the first development, we also raise our voices against the second. The forces of illiberalism are gaining strength throughout the world and have a powerful ally in Donald Trump, who represents a real threat to democracy. Our resistance must not be allowed to harden into its own brand of dogma or coercion, which right-wing demagogues are already exploiting. The democratic inclusion we want can be achieved only if we speak out against the intolerant climate that is set in on all sides. The free exchange of information and ideas, the lifeblood of a liberal society, is daily becoming more constricted. We have come to expect this on the radical right. Censoriousness is also spreading more widely in our culture, and intolerance of opposing views, a vogue for public shaming and ostracism, and the tendency to dissolve complex policy issues in a blinding moral certainty. We uphold the value of robust and even caustic counter-speech from all quarters, but it is now all too common to hear calls for swift and severe retribution in response to perceived transgressions of speech and thought. More troubling still, institutional leaders, in a spirit of panicked damage control, are delivering hasty and disproportionate punishments instead of considered reforms. Editors are fired for running controversial pieces. Books are withdrawn for alleged inauthenticity. Journalists are barred from writing on certain topics. Professors are investigated for quoting works of literature in class. A researcher is fired for circulating a peer-reviewed academic study. And the heads of organizations are ousted for what are sometimes just clumsy mistakes. Whatever the arguments around each particular incident, the result has been to steadily narrow the boundaries of what can be said without the threat of reprisal. We're already paying the price in greater risk aversion among writers, artists, and journalists who fear for their livelihoods if they depart from the consensus or even lack sufficient zeal in agreement. This stifling atmosphere will ultimately harm the most vital causes of our time. The restriction of debate, whether by a repressive government or an intolerant society, invariably hurts those who lack power and makes everyone less capable of democratic participation. The way to defeat bad ideas is by exposure, argument, and persuasion, not by trying to silence or wish them away. We refuse any false choice between justice and freedom, which cannot exist without each other. As writers, we need a culture that leaves us room for experimentation, risk-taking, and even mistakes. We need to preserve the possibility of good faith disagreement without dire professional consequences. If we won't defend the very thing on which our work depends, we shouldn't expect the public or the state to defend it for us. I think that's pretty good. I think it's got some problems, but it's definitely something that if I had ever been asked to sign on to, I definitely would sign on to. I want to go through it. I also want to go through some of the complaints that I've heard against it, kind of summarized in this other article. But first, let's go through some of the names that signed on to it. You can find the whole thing. It's over at harpers.org. It's easy to find, just Harper's Letter. Harpers.org, a-letter-on-justice-and-open-debate. and-open-debate. Anyway, so let's go some of the people who have signed on to this, people would know. Greil Marcus, I thought that was interesting. He is a music writer, probably one of the best critics out there. Done a lot of great books. I've read one or two of them, I think. I listened to him at least, Greil Marcus. Kind of weird to see his name on there, but that's cool. Wynton Marsalis, jazz, I'm not sure, probably a bunch of his different instruments, but why do I think either trombone or trumpet, maybe? And then it's really interesting because a lot of the names on here are names that I've seen before or people that I've even follow and listen to podcasts or whatever, and it was neat to see them all coming together on here. Definitely some big ones people know. Margaret Atwood, sci-fi writer, I think, or at least definitely a writer. Let's go through some of these. John McWhorter, kind of a person pushing back against kind of the Black Lives Matter, some of that, those issues. Let's go through Yasha Monk. He's got this new magazine called Persuasion, which is trying to be, I guess, a subscription, I don't know, email magazine for kind of liberal values, which is cool. But I have some questions about that. I read his article introducing that. I really don't like that it's behind a paywall. I think that's completely against the values, liberal values. I've got to find a way to get these people paid. But it's also seems to be closed and very elitist. And we'll get into some of those complaints about this letter. And I think some of the other people who push this, push their version of liberal values. David Brooks, columnist, believe New York Times, people know that name. George Packer, kind of an alternative writer, I think, but well known. Steven Pinker, Harvard University, wrote, I think it's Enlightenment Now, he's great. Noam Chomsky, which speaks for itself. Nicholas Christakis, someone I followed for a long time. Yale University, he's been on the Sam Harris podcast a number of times. He's great. I think he has something to do with infectious disease, so he's a pretty good follow for COVID stuff as well, but he's also very big. A lot of these people, a lot of their things that they talk about is kind of liberal values. Although they haven't really talked about it as liberal values. Sometimes people use the term liberal, but often they're just kind of like anti-wokeism, anti-cancel culture, all that kind of stuff. It's become almost an industry, which kind of pisses me off because, you know, it's something that we should be talking about, but it's kind of the negative. We should be trying to push for what we think is the right thing instead of just constantly complaining about all these people doing the wrong thing. And how society's changing, we should be advocating and trying to make it be better, which is what I've tried to do with my website and this podcast. I believe Megan Dalm, I've seen before her name around. Listened to her, I think, a few times. The big name on here for me, really, Caitlin Flanagan, I think, is another one. Big name on here is Jonathan Rauch, because he is the guy who I book that I recommend a lot. It's called Kindly Inquisitors. I believe it came out in like 2006 or something, maybe earlier than that. But it is just the best book. You've got to read it. 160 pages, arguing for why we have to have open debate, why even if something is painful, some piece of, you know, some information or some opinions are painful or not what anybody wants to hear, that the arguments have to be said. I got into this Twitter, jumped onto this little Twitter thread about that, and I thought I made that case, basically what Rauch was saying, that just because, you know, you think someone's going to be hurt, have their feelings hurt by something you say, if you think it's a valuable, you know, if you think what you're going to say is a valuable piece of the conversation, is going to help to contribute to the discussion, you should say it. If you're just saying shit to piss people off, to annoy people, I don't think that's a good idea. If you're just trying to be an asshole, not a good idea. But no matter where you're coming from personally, if you're a racist or, you know, or not a racist or whatever you are, if you have something that contributes to making it, you know, some argument, some piece of the, some information that's valuable, you should contribute it, you know, in as kind as a way as you can. Sometimes humor is valuable, so you might want to make a joke, but that we have to keep the space open for that, because if there's, it's always possible for someone's feelings to get hurt by some piece of information. That's not the way that we can police this, the public conversation. Even to go maybe even further than that, but sometimes it won't just be feelings that are hurt. Maybe physically somebody might get hurt because of some argument you make. I'm sorry, but the argument is the key. You know, if you can do it in such a way that, I don't know, you think somebody won't get hurt, that's good. Obviously, you try to deter, prevent pain and suffering or anything like that. But the culture evolves because of what we learn from each other. From the conversations, the back and forth between people, we get smarter, we learn more, we do better, and progress is made as a culture. So we cannot close that off. We cannot close off honest perspectives just because somebody might get hurt, somebody might feel, you know, have their feelings hurt because of it. Because first of all, you don't know how many other people are going to be helped by that piece of the conversation. So just, yeah. Anyway, Jonathan Rauch makes that case really well, regarding how that's part of science, how that's part of politics, how that's part of economics, about, you know, contributing to the public conversation. It's essential. It's why, you know, liberal societies went out, because the best ideas, you know, can bubble to the top. We all filter them out. We try to raise up the good ones. We try to knock down the bad ones. That's part of what we're supposed to do. And I think I'll get to a little bit more about what I think about as what cancel culture is. But some more of these names. I believe I follow Kat Rosenfield, but not sure. Kamel Foster, he's really good. He is kind of the host of a show called The Fifth Column, which I think is getting more and more popular very quickly. He's descendant. I think he has Jamaican blood or whatever, but he's really big on not calling himself black. He's very challenged. He challenges that whole dynamic. And, well, you know, not sure I'm with that, but that's him, and he can do what he wants there. But he has great, deeper conversations about the, I don't know what even to call that, right? The ADOS experience, but not even really technically ADOS. I don't know. He's really great. He's a really good, great thinker, libertarian. Don't agree with him on everything, but he's really inquisitive and honest, and it's good. Check that out. Check out that podcast. Listen to that. David Frum, who I really, really do not like, because he helped Bush as a writer, journalist now, I guess, but more opinion guy, I think. He was, I believe, part of the second Bush administration, and he helped write speeches that got us into Iraq. So, sure, there's other good stuff and bad stuff about him, but I do not like him, but he's joining this letter And just because he's also on this letter is not a fucking reason not to like the letter, which people were doing, just frustrating. J.K. Rowling, obviously, the writer behind the Harry Potter series, which my daughter is now really into, but I am not. I've paid a little attention to it, not too blown away by it. But J.K. Rowling has gotten into trouble for questioning trans issues. I guess there's some concern that young kids who in many previous years would grow up and figure out that they are either gay or lesbian or bisexual or whatever, there's concern that they're being pushed into taking hormones and becoming trans. And I don't know if that's true, but again, you know, the conversations are fine to have and to doubt and to question. And yes, they might be painful, but you have to have honest conversations. It's just so important. And you're going to find a million examples, everyone, of fucking pain that, you know, certain people saying certain things is causing. I'm sympathetic to it. You have to understand that cannot win. that ceases to make a successful society. You know, there's a million different reasons that people shouldn't talk about something, and it can't win, or we're fucked. Francis Fukuyama. I think I should not like this person. I think he's kind of a pro-war person. I do not know much more. I think he wrote some famous stuff. Anyway, is it the end of history? I'm not sure. Maybe he was part of that. Anyway, name people would know. There's a lot of other names people know that I just don't know. But Salman Rushdie, obviously, wrote a book. Many hardcore... what is it? Islamic fundamentalists, I guess would be the right term. They thought what he said there was scandalous and he should be killed for it, and they demanded his head, and he had to live in, he had to hide out for many, many years. Not sure what his, you know, situation is right now, but, yeah. And, that's horrible. This is the problem, people. That which you say, we must protect speech for those that we do not like. That's the hard speech to protect, but you have to, because people will try to shut down other people even so much to go into the level of threat and violence. And yeah. Salman Rushdie, Malcolm Gladwell, whose books I think I've read, I've listened to him speak on occasion, Rogan Show. Some of these other names, Jesse Single, he is a host on this show Blocked and Reported I've been listening to recently. Good stuff. Another person who's on there is here somewhere, not seeing her name yet. Oh, Katie Herzog. Okay, yep. All right, some of the other names, Jonathan Haidt, who is along with Jonathan Rauch, someone I really look up to. Jonathan Haidt has done a number of different things, but Moral Foundations Theory is maybe the biggest piece, where he gives basis, I think, good basis for saying why there's a left and right divide, because there are certain things that we value differently than each other in generally. Nothing is absolute, but there tends to be a difference there, and I think it's true, and they did it with data and asking people, and that's explained in a book called Righteous Mind, which is really good. Yeah, good stuff. Gloria Steinem, you'll know that name, feminist icon. Jeet here, I followed that person for a while. Not sure I'm the biggest fan, but somebody I follow on Twitter. Zephyr Teachout, who was a very progressive advocate, ran for office a couple times, I believe, in New York, And I've read a number of stuff that she's done. Great. Coleman Hughes, another person with another person, African-American, who challenges a lot of the standard perspectives. Great writer. Zaid Jilani. He had a podcast called Extremely Offline, which he tries to get, I think it's called Back Channel. And anyway, the original show was trying to get people, and he did, it was good. Only did a couple episodes, though, not too many. Trying to get people to discuss issues for like over an hour. Not really debate, but the long conversations and getting all different sides of things, which I have said before is like maybe the most important thing we need now. Because, you know, you can hear somebody discussing something and it can sound really good and really smart and like change your whole perspective. And if you're, you know, been through this whole damn thing before, similar experiences, you realize that what you really need is somebody that is just as well informed that has a different perspective. And you need those two people to go at it for a while. You need to listen to it and figure out, you know, which of those two people you think makes the most sense. Not to say that whatever you decide as an individual is going to be right, but it just gives you so much of a better perspective on an issue to not just hear one person's perspective on it. You know, some people do a really good job of bringing in lots of different perspectives when they explain something, but either way, they're biased and you just want to get multiple perspectives. And if you can get two people with very different perspectives, but very well informed, talking about something often, at least for a long period of time, maybe repeatedly, you can flesh out a lot of the details that, you know, are weaker on both sides. And it's just a great way to do that. And he was trying to do that. It was good. And maybe he can do some more of that. Zaid Jilani, journalist. Some other names on here. Barry Weiss. She's a writer for the New York Times. Not a big fan of hers, but she's a name. She's been on Rogan. And anyway, people that I like tend to like her, which is weird. But anyway, Garry Kasparov, who, not sure if he ran for the whatever it is, presidency of Russia or not, but he's been around fighting for freedom in Russia. Thomas Chatterton Williams, another one of the African Americans who have a different perspective. Typical spin. Matt Iglesias, who I think writes for Vox, and I'm not too impressed by him, but he's around. People know the name. Fareed Zakaria, who you've seen on CNN. And that's, I think, most of the names that I've known. So obviously there are tons of other names on here, just people I don't not aware of. So, and it's kind of funny, some names that I think are weird that not on here, like Sam Harris, seems weird that he was not on here. I don't know how that, I'm sure we'll find out if he was asked or not asked. Or I think there's probably some of this that was done not to bring in certain people because it would piss off lots of other people. Let's see, to go through some of the text of what was written here. Let's do this here. So I think it was very, I don't know, it was carefully written. It was kind of written from a lefty or Democrat, I guess, perspective. Let's go through it again. Our cultural institutions, there'll be a lot of breaks that I'll just add some stuff. Cultural institutions are facing a moment of trial. Yes. I think that's more partially because of technology changes too, though. So anyway, lots of reasons why that's happening, I think. Powerful protests for racial and social justice are leading to overdue demands for police reform, along with wider calls for greater equality and inclusion across our society, not least in higher education, journalism, philanthropy, and the arts. Yes. Okay. Generally support that. But this needed reckoning has also intensified a new set of moral attitudes and political commitments that tend to weaken our norms of open debate and toleration of differences in favor of ideological conformity. Yes, so much so, yes. That's the core of what we're talking about here. The norms of open debate and toleration of differences in favor of ideological conformity. Yeah, if you differ, you can get called out for being a racist or sexist or whatever. And I noticed this a while ago when there was I think there was some kind of letter for like the fucking local library here, and a guy did not, one of the board members did not want to support it because it was like pro-trans rights or something, and he didn't really support that, and so he said it, and then everybody attacked him, and he's definitely right-wing, but like what does that matter? People can believe anything they want, and they can have opinions that they want. Like, it's very frustrating that we're really trying to control what people are thinking and what's okay to think and what's not okay to think or express. As we applaud the first development, we also raise our voices against the second. Yes. Forces of illiberalism. Yay. Yes, that's exactly what it is. It is illiberalism. Are gaining strength throughout the world and have a powerful ally in Donald Trump. I don't know that I would say a powerful ally in Donald Trump. I think he's an ally. I don't think he really gives a shit about liberal values. I think he, like I think I said in the speech that he gave at Mount Rushmore, he talks a game because he's only talking the game in order to attack other people. But he goes around and, complains about people kneeling during the fucking flag or, during the national anthem or any of that, and that's kind of my concern about. I mean, I guess the letter kind of addresses it, but there's a lot of cancel culture on the right as well. It might not have to be called cancel culture. Maybe we need a new term. There's a lot of people who are trying to silence other people, trying to bring social shame or pressure on other people. Or maybe even economic pressure because they're saying, or it is thought that they believe something, even if they maybe not express it. That's kind of goes along with who they associate with. A lot of that is happening, and it's happening all over the place. It's a left and right thing. And it's happened in the past too. I mean, in the sense that maybe the new thing is to try to pressure people. Cancel culture is kind of a thing about trying to get people fired, which I think is really horrible because of what they've, views that they've expressed. I think that's horrible. But we also, and this is kind of maybe talked about a little later, but there have been, in the forums of conversation and in the places that get a lot of attention, certain views have never been given a fair amount of attention, I believe. So maybe you don't call that cancel culture, but that's something that needs to change as well. And we're starting to see that now because of the internet and so many different outlets being available. So that's great, but we still have these norms of certain sources being raised up to a higher level and getting more attention. And so if you're allowed in one of those, but you're not, if you're not, sorry, if you're not allowed in one of those, but your people who disagree with you are allowed to be able to write, or in, to get an op-ed in the New York Times or Wall Street Journal or any of that kind of stuff, that's not fair. That's really not treating the debate fairly either. The conversation fairly. So, that's existed for a long time too. I have some thoughts about how we fix that, but yeah, I have to decentralize, as I've said before. All right. The forces of illiberalism are getting strength throughout the world. They have a powerful ally in Donald Trump. They have an ally who represents a real threat to democracy. I don't think so. I don't think he is a threat to democracy. I think he talks a lot of shit. He talks about things like, I'm going to run again and whatever. I'm sure he said some other dumb shit. But at this point, I don't see him as a threat to democracy. You could actually argue that the alternatives are a threat to democracy. Russiagate, continual conversation about how Trump didn't, you know, actually win because it was, he didn't win the popular vote, but that's not how fucking rules work. And so when you keep saying that, you keep trying to say he's like not your president. Like, those people, they're pushing this idea that, you know, that they're basically weakening democracy. They're saying, you know, that they're not gonna, they think that the standards that we've accepted as what, you know, how our democracy works, they don't think that's okay because he fucking won. So yeah, I personally think that the people who have challenged Trump in a lot of ways, the continual pushes to impeach him without going through proper process, which I think is what this impeachment boiled down to. I think it was justified to continue to look at what he had done. And, you know, it was appropriate to open up the impeachment, you know, inquiry and all that. But then they tried to crush it. And I think that's a threat to democracy. And then it's constantly these conversations about he's not, you know, he's not mentally there to be president, or, you know, or he's too erratic or any of that kind of stuff. That, all those things. And when you're trying to, anyway, a lot of the threats are coming from the left, from Democrats, resistance, this whole refusal to accept that he's the president. Anyway, yeah, but then of course Trump does talk about these like strong men, and so he likes them. Anyway, yeah, it's all over the board. It sucks. It's not good for democracy, but who's bigger threat? Yeah, I think it's on the left at this point. But resistance must not be allowed to harden into, and again, that's what annoying about this letter is that I think it's very much framed to like say, hey, left, you guys are really going too far here, but, you know, we're kind of on your side. See, we agree with you that Trump's a fucking problem, and it's just so, and it's also not very specific on a lot of these things. So it just plays a game to try to like get the left to like, you know, to buddy up to the left, and then to say, hey guys, hey, we're your friends, but I think you're going too far here. Anyway, but resistance must not be allowed to harden into its own brand of dogma or coercion, which right-wing demagogues are already exploiting. Yeah, okay, right-wing demagogues. In other countries, probably, yes. It's probably a bigger thing on the right, but the democratic inclusion we want can be achieved only if we speak out against the intolerant climate that is set in on all sides. Yes, sure. The free exchange of information and ideas, the lifeblood of a liberal society, is daily becoming more constricted. Yes, it's had problems before, but it's got an issue now. So, while we have come to expect this on the radical right, censoriousness is also spreading more widely in our culture. An intolerance of opposing views, vogue for public shaming and ostracism, the tendency to dissolve complex policy issues in a blinding moral certainty. Yep, those are all, I've seen those as problems. It's a huge problem. We uphold the value of robust and even caustic counter speech from all quarters. I think it's arguable that they haven't done that, but they should. Everybody should, yes. But it is now all too common to hear calls for swift and severe retribution in response to perceived transgressions of speech and thought. More troubling still, institutional leaders in a spirit of panic damage control, delivering hasty and disproportionate punishments instead of considered reforms. Editors are fired for running controversial pieces. Books are withdrawn for alleged inauthenticity. Yeah, so there you go. Editors are fired for running controversial pieces. That's the New York Times, I believe. Books are withdrawn for alleged inauthenticity. That's a concern that some people are not supposed to write about issues if they have not had, if you know, you can't write from the perspective of a black person if you're not black, da 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 da, or a minority or something. Journalists are barred from writing on certain topics. Professors are investigated for quoting works of literature in class. A researcher is fired for circulating a peer-reviewed academic study. Heads of organization ousted for what are sometimes just clumsy mistakes. Yep. Whatever the arguments around each particular incident, result has been to steadily narrow the boundaries of what can be said without the threat of reprisal. We are already paying the price in greater risk aversion among art writers, artists, and journalists who fear for their livelihoods if they depart from the consensus or even lack sufficient zeal in agreement. Agreed. And this is the real, danger of this, is that when you see a rise in repercussions for people who, speak or, express support or a lack of support, whatever, whenever they're doing what's not the popular thing to do, and, other people are trying to pressure them and they're having to deal with some shit, besides fair criticism, I think that's needs to be respected and valued and should be a key part of what we're doing here. But when people are going further than that, when they're attacking people, when they're trying to have them get fired or shamed or ostracized or all that, that changes the entire dynamic of how people are gonna, how other people who see that, that's the whole thing that we've got to think about. That you could have a writer, here we go, writer, artist, or journalist, right, who expresses something like that. And social media changes this all because now everybody's seeing everything and everybody's talking about everything. So, but when somebody has some kind of greater repercussion than just criticism for expressing a viewpoint that's unpopular, what you're going to see is you're going to see a lot of people, more people, be afraid of expressing that viewpoint as well. So, what you get is a stifling of the conversation. You get a stifling of what, of what we need to have. We need to have robust dialogue as a culture in order to make the progress that we need, in order to hear all the different voices, to try to make changes that satisfy as many of those voices as possible. You don't want one side feeling like they can express themselves and another side being silenced. So I think a big piece of what we have to consider here is social media. And when people are, us little people, when we're out here and we're seeing those kinds of repercussions for, J.K. Rowling or whoever, bigger names, there's an argument that who gives a shit? It's these people, they can't be canceled and whatever. But when you see those kinds of repercussions, that kind of dogpiling on people, the big names, what you're going to do is you're going to see silence. You're not going to see what you would normally see from the other people who agree with them. From you're going to see unpopular perspectives basically disappear. It's horrible when Twitter does that. If Twitter's going around or YouTube or whatever, and they're deciding certain people can't be on the platform because of what they say or they believe or what they express, that's horrible. But even just this, attitude, these responses, these extreme responses to certain kinds of expression, that silences, what people actually think. And so if, and then when you, let's say you don't feel that, and you're on a social media platform, and all you do is see, the accepted opinion, because there's a lot of other people reading that, and they don't have that accepted opinion, but they're scared to post anything, you're going to get a skewed view of what the general populace thinks of something. you're going to miss out on good, honest arguments about why that's wrong or why that doesn't work for them or why they came up in a different, you know, they were, you know, had a different lifestyle and they think something different. And, you know, it, and this alternative perspective, this unpopular view makes a ton of sense for them from where they live, for the life that they, you know, what they have to deal with every day. And you're not going to fucking hear it. And that's not healthy. That's not going to get us where we want to go, which is an inclusive, understanding society. Okay. The stifling atmosphere will ultimately harm the most vital causes of our time. Yep. The restriction of debate, whether by a repressive government or an intolerant society, invariably hurts those who lack power and makes everyone less capable of democratic participation. Yep, that's exactly what I was saying. And that's the whole thing, is that it's not... Somebody was going back and forth on Twitter about, it is not, and this is also a libertarian issue, it is not just whether government is going to protect it or not. You know, we have this First Amendment, freedom of speech, which ultimately only means that the government will not repress our speech, will not shut us down. Lots of details on there, but that's generally what it's about. But it does not protect us from, you know, from the culture generally knocking, you know, making it very difficult, very painful to express opinions, to be honest. That is, and again, let me say, criticism is good. Tear apart ideas, that's great. But when you're trying to make it socially difficult for someone to express opinions, that's where it's gone too far. And that's what, when I'm talking about liberal values are worth fighting for, I'm talking about a liberal culture. I'm talking about an open, wanting to hear all perspectives culture. And there is nothing in law, in the First Amendment, in government, that is protecting that. It is only us as members of the society who decide to either uphold that norm or don't, or decide to try to, you know, decide that we can try to push down people who disagree with us. And there's plenty of fucking good reasons to do that. But ultimately, it is bad for the society if people do not feel free to express themselves, to express unpopular opinions. That has to be there. You know, we all have to balance it. You don't want to be a jerk. But again, if you think it's a valuable piece of the conversation, you cannot be deterred from doing that just because, you know, just because you think someone's not going to, you know, that someone is going to fucking call your place of work a million times and say, hey, this person, you know, doesn't believe, you know, they said black, or they said colored, they called, you know, on this source, they said that, or they don't think, you know, they don't believe in using somebody's, you know, any of these kinds of things. They don't believe in using somebody's pronouns, or, you know, they didn't do it maliciously. They just fucked up, or, you know, they just disagree. They don't think gay marriage is, you know, something that should exist. It should be okay to believe that, you know, if your job is to hand out licenses and gay marriage is legal, then you have to do that. Yes. But it's still okay not to think it's the right thing, no matter what it is. I think you have to go even so far as to say, if someone, you know, is directly racist, thinks black people are worse than white people, they have to be able to say that. They have to be able to believe that. That's okay. If they go and act on that, if they mistreat people because of that, that is wrong. But to believe that, to say that, that door has to, we have to keep that door open. You know, if they go and start calling people, you know, the N-word, like, that's not valuable. It's that's just mean and, you know, abusive. That's not okay. But for them to have a conversation about it, we have to find the space for that. restriction of debate, whether by repressing, as I already said, the way to defeat bad ideas is by exposure, argument, and persuasion, not by trying to silence or wish them away. Yeah, exactly. We refuse any false choice between justice and freedom, which cannot exist without each other. I'm not sure I completely follow that sentence. I think that means that you can't have a just society if you're not hearing all the perspectives. That, you know, if the society, if people do not feel free to express themselves, you're not going to be able to get to justice because people are going to be repressed to even talk about certain things. That's how I read that. I'm not sure if I'm catching it. As writers, we need a culture that leaves us room with for experimentation, risk-taking, and even mistakes. We need to preserve the possibility of good faith disagreement without dire professional consequences. We need to preserve, if we won't defend the very thing on which our work depends, we shouldn't expect the public or the state to defend it for us. Yes. So let's go through some of the arguments against it. I'll put a link to it. I'm not sure. I think it's a detailed response to it or something, I think is what it's called. I went through it and I thought some of these points were good. Some of the people on this, some of the signatories on here have, I believe like Barry Weiss has actually engaged in cancel culture against other people in the past. I don't know that that's an argument against this letter. I don't think it is. But the idea that we have to be, you know, if we're going to complain about cancel culture, we need to be do it in a more total, fair, complete, non-hypocritical way. Completely agree. Okay. Another argument against this is that these are basically privileged people with access to attention. And they don't talk about how marginalized voices have been silenced for generations in journalism, academia, and publishing. Completely agree. It's what I said earlier. We have to, as part of my planks of fighting for liberal values, we have to better balance, decentralize the power of communication. Certain people have access to lots of attention that they otherwise would not if they were just, let's say, like me, a random podcaster, a guy who's on Twitter, a guy who has written things on the internet. If they do not get picked up by the New York Times or some magazine or something, they will not get as much attention as those being chosen by those outlets gives them. Which means that those outlets with their biases, every outlet's going to have a bias, is then elevating certain voices over other voices. That's has to happen. There's, you know, a limited amount of space. If they even tried to pick all the different choices, there's still going to be voices and opinions and, you know, perspectives that they're going to leave out. If we look at history, there have been many, many marginalized voices that don't get to speak out. You know, Noam Chomsky might be an interesting example of that, where he was a professor and he's gotten on, you know, different shows throughout history and things like that. But major media right now generally doesn't ever talk to Chomsky. I don't know if he'll go on those at all, but a lot of his perspectives are quite, you know, further left than what's accepted in mainstream. And so he doesn't get to go, you know, he doesn't get heard on those outlets. Ron Paul might be another one. There's a lot of different, you know, voices that get marginalized. And so if we're have a true commitment to, you know, liberal values, to basically the exact opposite of cancel culture, we would need to figure out how to decentralize and break up those senses, those sources of attention, and democratize them. So my argument for doing that is I do think social media is a big part of that. I think that's, some argue about, that's what this letter is all about, trying to, shut down the voices of social media, these elitists trying to keep the rabble-rousers at bay and say, you guys can't all band together and complain about us. And, you know, I think there's some truth to that, some argument, there's value to what they're saying there, but if it's just criticism, that's one thing. When they're trying to go further to, punish or, create repercussions upon people that goes beyond criticism, I think that's going too far. I think that's not healthy for the society. And so when social media turns into that, it's not a good thing. But in a way, if we could, as I say, decentralized, the Fediverse is a great example of that. If we could get a lot of opinions, if we could get it so that opinions rise really based on merit, really based on people reading something, sharing it, lots of people sharing it, and the best stuff rising to the top, that's really where opinion, specifically opinion, how it should get there. And so I would really love to see a lot of the sources of opinion writing wither and die. Specifically, let's say at a New York Times or some outlet that does really good journalism, really good reporting, gathering of information. It's very frustrating to me that we want to support that and, pay them for that, but then some of that money gets directed to these opinion writers who we may not like at all. And, it's really not, and they're getting paid because of it. And there's no reason those same, those same people should not just be able to have a blog or a podcast or whatever and get as much attention as that merits. They shouldn't get extra attention because they're coupled with really good reporting done by people who could otherwise get paid more if the opinion writers were floating on their own and asking for Patreon donations or whatever it took. Matt Taibbi is an interesting case because he's got a Substack that I think a lot of people are paying for. I read the free stuff. I haven't paid for it yet. But I think that economic situation needs to be worked out a little bit. I think we need more people paying smaller amounts for stuff. We need to get it out. If that was happening, if we were all regular payers for this, if the opinion people were separated from the news outlets, I think more people might be willing to pay for it. They would have more trust in the journalism and the reporting, and perhaps things could be moved, outside of paywalls. But the idea that these writers didn't make as much of a case about how, how marginalized so many views have been in the past before cancel culture became a thing, that would have made their argument stronger. And if they were to, to stand for that too, if they were to maybe, regularly try to bring up more smaller voices, which I think they do sometimes. They'll talk about this was really good or whatever when they're talking on a podcast or whatever, but they could spend even more trying to rise, raise other people up. And the fact that they don't, I think I agree with the, complaints. That does come off as kind of elitist. Powerful platforms like Harper's could, should, don't give their space to those without access to attention. Basically what I said before. Same kind of thing, except that, being Harper's. I don't even know. I mean, is there space for something like Harper's? Sure there is, but I don't know that there should be. I don't know why everybody can't just be a blogger at some level if they're going to write opinions. There is an issue of, editorial oversight to make sure that what somebody is saying is not, untrue. But I think that could be outsourced. I think you could have, it's basically this issue that we have now of fact checking. You could have, there's like Snopes or PolitiFact or all these different outlets out there, they could almost be something that you would hire, and then they would really care about their, whether they're respected or not. You could, let's say, see 50 of these different things out there. And, you know, if you're, let's say Snopes is a bad one or whatever, if you're fact-checked by Snopes, that doesn't mean so much. But if you're fact-checked by somebody that's much better, that should mean more to the people who are reading you. You know, I think there's a better way we could do this that would completely separate opinion, but would still maintain the editorial oversight. Social media now giving space to those who previously didn't have it. That's what I was saying before. But again, social media we have to be careful with social media. We don't want to get into the bubbles, and we also don't want to have these companies having so much control over who gets to be on their platforms, algorithms, you know, advertising. If you're on their platform, you're really just kind of serving their advertisers, and it's a very screwy situation. But a Fediverse world of social media, where social media was built into more source into almost everything we did, so that so that most of what we saw was because it rised up. You know, it rose through people that you trusted, and if you know, we'd all have to be careful that we try to follow different perspectives. But if we were all smarter about it, how we did it, and use better social media, the best stuff would rise up more than it does right now. There's a lot of gatekeepers now that there perhaps doesn't need to be. So, what else do I want to say? Editorial judgment is unavoidable. There is just not unlimited space, right? So somebody has to make these decisions. It's unavoidable when you're using, when you're having a platform like Harper's or New York Times or whatever. So, but like I said, there's a way around that. And yes, the letter fails to defend the always silenced. Like I was saying, a lot of voices don't get heard, and this says very little, you know, says nothing about that. So, all right. I think I covered mostly what I want to on this. Let's see if I can get my guest on here. Sorry for the delay here. Let's see if I can get there. Hopefully he's still available. It had to been deleted. Oh, to do that's the news in the news and music. All right, do this. Is it working? Hey, you there? I've been before. Can you do the your machine? Yeah, it's actually.
Let me see if it's Wi-Fi. Is any better?
No.
Every machine.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry, man.
So, maybe next week.
All right,
cool. Thanks. Bye. You guys heard that, right? Very bubbly. Oh, so last week he was on, Boris, and I think the problem was on my end, but then this week he was trying his phone, and, yeah, it was not coming through very clear. So, maybe we'll hear from him next week, but I gotta put out my feelers and see, get some guests. But I'm glad I was able to talk about this stuff this week. So, I just think it's a really, really important issue. We've got to have a way to talk about it that's really honest. I do not like that it's, how do I say, I don't want to do it in a complaining way. I don't like that the way we've talked about, you know, and I guess the letter too, it was like, you know, fuck cancel culture, it's such a bad thing. It's like, let's talk about what we really want. One thing that I wanted to bring up is that there was a, it's kind of dead, I guess, now, but, Eric Weinstein, I think is his name, and his brother Brett. So anyway, Eric Weinstein and a bunch of people, they were kind of calling themselves the intellectual dark web for a while. And I thought that was, and he was basically saying that there's they just kind of changed the terminology somewhere along the way, but there's kind of a gatekeeper culture that goes on. What is it? The gated narrative. So it talks about how certain, you know, voices could get into the mainstream media and some couldn't. And he was also just saying that we have a real, what is it, a sense-making problem. So he was talking about it, his brother Brett, was run out of a college, trying to remember what the name of it is. Anyway, but he was connected with Joe Rogan and Sam Harris and other folks that the names aren't coming to me right now. But, oh man, the guy who made his big thing about the fucking pronouns in Canada. Damn it, I can't even remember, maybe I'll get it later. Anyway, they're kind of calling themselves the intellectual dark web. And they made a really good point, you know, that certain voices don't get to be heard, and so we're not, it's really hard to understand things when you can't get certain perspectives heard. But what they would talk about, I guess my guest is going to try to get on. Let's try it again. Let's do this. All right, get back to Peterson. Peterson, what's his, Jeffrey Peterson, what's his fucking first name? Damn it, okay. I know how to bring it up. All right, let's do this. I thought I'm not sure. Sorry, I don't have time, but...
Okay. Pretty good.
Cool. Yeah, I'm trying to be good, but... your thought on the war?
Is it, with the ball?
Just Lee, kind of. You know, kind of crackly.
Hmm.
You know, so you don't really notice it when you say something like, or something, but when you... the sentence, you kind of, like, lose every other few words. I think it's understandable, though, but...
Okay. Okay, yeah, sorry, it's tough. I don't want to be giving you bad call quality.
It's okay.
But yeah, the letter was, I thought it was a really funny timing, because I kind of had a similar situation happen with this past... Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I had just recently, I'm not sure how much you've been following with the Libertarians.
Not really.
On her, recently came out this tweet, Black Lives, and she said something. We need to be actively racist. It's just liberated the
second. Right.
I had started running this as like a socialist warrior, and I'm kind of Supreme. I'm not really familiar with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he kind of was racist for going along with his ideas. And I was like, this is cancel culture, getting in there now. And this is just crazy. It's just like, if right now, where if they're really being taken by Antifa, exactly what might be some of
them. Yeah. It was essentially,
sure, what is trying to stay old feeling on it? A bunch of us, hey, you know, what's wrong? That was my end, the anti racist matter. I don't have problems with being racist. I don't act anti racist. They call me the whole thing in libertarian is going to be what peace and political and definitely not actively racist because the anti part of the, you know, the bank is anti racist. Have play racist.
Yeah.
So I was like trying to, I was going back with a few people about this. Just, I had, there was only a disagreement. Most of them had something. Like a kind of they didn't in their bio. Yeah, they okay. were so staring like, okay, there's like a different section that are there. I just doesn't even exist.
Yeah.
I mean, just, that's what I was thinking. Just like the old Paul, you know, disagreed only dealing that he's really had with her was pretty much else. You know, well, you know, I'm pro-choice pretty much like that. And then you know, there's a whole other thing on where it is straight up he only likes.
No, it's possible.
No, because he's like stated like in his.
It's a new verb pair.
And
that's mockery.
Exactly. So, you saying, Anti, it's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, I had a conversation on Twitter about but
it's funny, the reason to apply is I have a pet, and the thing that triggered me, that I specifically made dump the most parent, like, I don't know, but the, and that was, what's, like, are you going to say, we need gun control and high taxes? And they're, like, policy choices, and Brain, like, had this whole thing about, like, de-racism, basically. That was, and I started going back with him, this was, you know, a 10-letter argument about this racism stuff, and but it was just that triggered him, was this whole Trump thing. Because he's, I think he's got, like, Trump arrangement syndrome. He's one of those people.
That's so weird from him. Doesn't make
yeah. Huh. I think he's, like, he's an anti-person. I think he's, like, Antifa. He's in the street, like, throwing an Antifa. I mean, like, that's just from, like, what he talked about. I've done him, like, tweet support, like, I support third fascists everywhere. Like, do you see, like, that this is not anti-fascism. This is the private party hurting people, not anti-fascism at all.
Right.
They never really want.
Yeah, and that kind of weird thing about it. I guess it's something they could call it anti-fascism, but it's it's their own version.
Yeah.
It's still secret countries go over against each other. But it's, doesn't mean they're not beef.
Absolutely. Huh. Sorry, I feel like the left that we use always completely on, like the hit and the A-War Vietnam War that we're hey man, going like that on. There's nothing like that now. It's all like all we have is blue violence. You have the Black Lives Matter protesters, and the you know, there's a few of those people that are not violent in any way trying to categorize all people in a common light. But I'm saying that the street side of there's I keep CDOs. It's just to generalize when I see those from Quinn and Seattle, the Black Lives Matter and the protesters there are so deep. And there's no like Tesla anymore. There's an extreme violence. Like they that's all they want anymore is violence. It's I mean like crazy.
You're saying it though. You're saying there's some who are not violent, but they're still trying to think. And that's where this problem is. I don't think that's what I'm missing. I see a left who does, you know, serve what people but, you know,
100%.
And we're left. Yeah, I thought that was part. And I don't even want to, I mean, it is the left, and it is where I stand in general. You know, I think you have to have this openness, and, you know, when you start to try to tell people what to think, that's the essence of the entire problem.
Right.
I don't know that should be just a left thing, but it is weird that seems to be gone. I don't know.
Well, and the worst part is it doesn't even work because, you know, you can't change someone's mind by just forcing them to think a certain way. You have to change their mind by getting them to see your point of view.
Right. I mean, you can. I think you can fuck with people's heads and make them think things that they otherwise, I mean, you know, fucking cults and stuff. But it's
yeah.
Bad. It's
well,
not
that's,
good.
And that's yeah, exactly. I mean, that's exactly what this woke stuff is really starting to look like. It's a real cult type behavior.
Yeah. And you don't even want people to be it's really hard conversations to have. I mean, you don't want people to, it's like I have this friend of mine who I found out she read the White Fragility thing, and I haven't read it yet, the book. And I was like, I don't think that's great. And she was kind of talking about it, but she didn't really talk directly about that one. She was talking about another book. I think she could sense that, you know, I was going to be critical of it, so she kind of went away from it. And I was like, I'm tough because I don't know I've heard all the criticism of it. I feel like I could engage it if you start bringing stuff up. I don't know that the other two people here who are sitting here want to hear this, but I really do kind of worry that, you know, she's a teacher, that you're falling into this, and I don't really think it's your fault, and I want to walk you through that, but...
You know. I am horrified that they are giving that to teachers as summer reading.
Yeah.
It's like, this is mind control. Like, this is public schools. They're in mass giving this out to teachers. It's like, do you not see what this is? This is the goal of this is like they're like literally, they're like we're trying to control what the teachers are going to think and say, so we can pass this on to the kids.
Yeah.
It seems super like here's the linear plan.
But
like no conspiracy theory. It's
right.
Obvious.
But they think it's healthy though. That's the thing. I don't know how much they think it's like. I don't know. It's like reading a fucking, what is it, To Kill a Mockingbird or something. It's like, it's a good, eye-opening book that, and, you know, they're totally wrong, but that's kind of what they think this thing is, and it's, you know, not that at all, but...
I guess, well, and here's the thing. I don't want to be, the problem is I don't want to be like them and say, we need to burn that book. I just want to act like it's a book, and it maybe needs to have a one-star review on Amazon.
Right.
You know, and we can say that book sucks and throw eggs at it, but
we have to talk it out. That's the only way with all this stuff. It's just scary because it took over so quick. You know?
Yeah, what I'm worried about is the fact that it got disseminated from the public school system. That's the thing that's different about it.
Yeah, with corporate too.
Like, yeah, and I mean, why don't we have? When I was a kid, we were supposed to read Animal Farm,
right?
Like George Orwell.
My daughter just did, so it's
yeah.
We're,
I mean,
we're okay.
Hopefully that keeps going.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're trying to cancel George Orwell.
Right.
I've heard they're taking down a statue in Europe because he was a bad guy. So I
I don't think so. I think that was fake. I think that one was.
I've seen a couple communists calling him a very bad person on the internet. Some with like over 100,000 people following. So I know there was definitely some Onion Babylon Bee type articles like joking about that, but there was also like Okay. I've seen some people saying like some crazy stuff about like George Orwell was
everything's possible at this point. Yeah.
I know, it's honestly all bets are off at this point.
Yeah. Was it Dave Smith who was talking? No, somebody was talking. Like,
No, the guy was a communist, and his name was something Norton. I'll find it. I'll share it with you when I find it.
Okay, but somebody brought up that I think Trump was joking in 2005 or something that eventually they're going to come for Washington and Jefferson, and obviously we're there.
He said that in 17.
Was that? Because I think they started saying earlier, and he was, but it was coming off as a joke. Like there was, I don't know if he meant it as a joke, but he was like, you know, there could be some level that it would, and it's going to get to this far, and obviously we've gotten there pretty quick.
Yeah, well, what happened? Because he said it really recently, mm-hmm. in I think in like 2017 or 2018, and they were asking them about taking down the monuments, and he basically said, I don't want to give them an inch because what are they going to do next? Take down Washington and Lincoln, and they took them down on their own. Like 10 minutes later, and he's like, see, this is what I'm talking about. And I feel like he let a lot of that happen just because it's like, this is him, this is his re-election plan, just let all this shit right. Go haywire. I'm not sure if you've actually seen the news. I was just looking at Twitter a minute ago before you called me, but they just took the people. Do you remember the Ken and Karen deal where the two people that pulled guns out on?
Yeah.
They just took their guns out of their house without arresting them or citing them with any crimes.
Huh. What was the... Was there... So there was no justification at all, or...?
They had a search warrant. They went in their house and took their guns.
Yeah. I mean, I saw the video of them. You know, there was a private area. I thought I saw... I don't know anymore, fuck. But broken down the gate and stuff, and so... They were on property just walking by their house. But.
See, and again, you show liberal values. I'm on Twitter, and I see a army, a wave. Literally, every name has the blue wave after it, too. And they all just say the most ridiculous shit. They're like, they're peaceful protesters. I'm like, there's nothing peaceful about trespassing
right.
on someone's private lawn.
Right. But you just have so many people with different information. And nobody, like...
Yeah.
And they're not... Nobody's listening to anybody else, so... We're following links or any of that shit.
Exactly. Or no one's following up or like wondering like, how did this end up like this? Or
right.
No curiosity.
Yeah, and they're not, listening to or reading anybody that, is trustworthy on the other side, So if
sure.
So it's so easy to dismiss because you just have no relationship with this person. You know, you just don't have any relationship with someone who's gonna give different perspectives on things, So you
and I mean They definitely looked really stupid up there. Like, they looked like they'd never held guns before. But a point that I made was they probably were terrified because they watched riots on TV for the last month and were like, I need to go buy guns.
Right. That's been a big thing talked about, is that now people are realizing they didn't want to make the waiting period so long.
Yeah, and the worst part was they were right because then whatever it was, 2 weeks later, people showed up at their doorstep and they were like, oh, shit, we didn't even get to go to the range yet.
Right.
Because they're probably still on COVID lockdowns.
Yeah. They're coming back, apparently.
Yeah. Which is even crazier. I this kind of, blew my mind the other day. Like, I'm usually kind of heartless when I see homeless people at the mall and stuff because they're always these drug addicts and they have this hustle at Christmas time. I watch them do it and it drives me crazy. They have, a boss that drops them off and it's like their job. Like, they have this whole pandering thing. They have this whole thing, and I get disgusted with them, so I never give them money.
Mm-hmm.
But yesterday though, I saw this guy. He's with a minivan. He's got his whole family, and he's got a sign. He says, "Need money for diapers and gas." And he's got his coronavirus mask on or whatever. He's got his whole family there, and he's standing outside of Walmart. And I'm like, "Holy shit, man! Maybe this dude's not actually." Maybe he actually for real needs money like that. Holy fuck, maybe it really is that bad. Yeah. So I actually gave the guy $10. Maybe I was just getting screwed. I don't know, but I gave the guy $10. I don't know, I felt bad. But I was just thinking if I didn't just get swindled out of $10, which is possible, but hypothetically, let's say I didn't. If this guy actually needed that money, this is the lockdowns. That's what that is. When you shut down the economy, and give people no opportunity to freely have commerce, the people who are on the lowest rung of that economy are going to have the hardest.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I was just like, this sucks. Like, if this is real, if that's not a dude, then this, if this isn't, I almost hope it's sold. It probably is. I almost hope it's a hustle. It's like, that sucks. That really sucks. He's out there, family, like, trying to get a couple dollars just for, like, the most basic things.
No, I mean, that's been the shittiest thing about, you know, I would say generally the left response on this thing, which is it's been complete dismissal of, you know, the real effects that, you know, I'm personally of the idea that the lockdowns, you know, have made sense, but it's fucking serious shit too. You know, it's not a no cost choice. And
yeah.
Many on the left, yeah, you know, mock it as though it is. And it's like, you guys are fucking, that's another piece of the left that I just don't understand anymore. Like, how, you know, and that's, I think, why so many of them have, you know, voted Republican, because they don't seem to have a heart for, you know, the average middle, lower class American, you know, if they're white, basically. You know,
yeah.
It's crazy to me.
It's so weird. It was a shocking moment. I was just kind of like, oh, damn. And then my first thought was like, yeah, you know, we're not locked down right now in the same way we were, but I mean,
right.
we have been. I mean, it definitely has effects. And I mean, this area is a little more affluent than most of the other cities in the area. Like, it's kind of unusual to see something like that around here, but it's not like possible.
Right.
That's the only reason it kind of caught me off guard, where it's like, it just didn't seem like the right spot to see that. That's why I was like, kind of like, this seems off here, but it's not impossible.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's even the thing too. You know, you have the lockdown for a while, and then you don't have lockdown, but you still have people not wanting to, you know, go places and pay. You know, they're still kind of not spending the way they would. So.
Yeah, but it definitely changes behavior.
Yeah. So, but I think I'm going to end this part tonight and get to my news and my music. So, cool. Thanks for being on, though.
Yeah, man. Very good. Good catching up.
Awesome. Cool. Have a good night.
You too. Again.
Thanks for listening. All right. Bye. See you.